On today's episode of Locked On Nets, the guys talk about the highs and lows from Kyrie Irving, the 54-point immaculate game, the injury, and everything that means for the Brooklyn Nets moving forward. Coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into another edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, home for your daily Brooklyn Nets coverage and part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am your host, Josh Bass. Joining me, Marcus Barahal. It has been an eventful couple days in Netsland, Marcus. And I think after tonight, we will be on a stretch of 3 days in a row hanging out and then going to the game tomorrow. So it will be four. Are you sick of me yet?
Never, Josh. That's a great run, though, that we're currently in the midst of right now. Wish I could say the same about the current Nets run. There were some highs, some lows. I'm sure we're going to get into all of it in this podcast, though.
For sure. Some highs, some lows, some mediums. I saw you improv last night. We went to a dinner after and grabbed some drinks and food. I had to ask the waitress like seven times to switch the TV from the Knicks game to the Nets game. I was thinking, we were with Gavin Shaw, host of Locked On Knicks. Go check out that podcast. And I was thinking that he was secretly going behind my back to tell her to keep the Knicks game on.
Yeah, they had the Knicks-Pacer game on like six different TVs.
Yeah, exactly.
It was atrocious.
And when she did switch it, it was to a TV that was not in my sight line. Yet. So I'd like, turn my neck and strain it to watch.
Yeah, you had to kind of face away from the conversation, but you got to see the game. That's something, I guess. Not a win, though. So
I know. I almost wish I didn't see it, and then obviously I had to do my full rewatch this morning because I am a professional. But big news coming out of this one, not necessarily the loss, more so the loss of Kyrie Irving. He suffered an injury in the fourth quarter with about 5 or 6 minutes left. Bradley Beal fell on him, hurt his knee. MRI came back negative, which is great, so no broken bones, but he will be reevaluated in a week. He did, suffered a MCL sprain. Obviously, with Kyrie having knee injuries in the past and generally a lot of injuries in the past, and with the Nets looking like they're not going to be going anywhere this season besides a first-round exit, you want to be cautious with that. So we'll see how long he'll be out. I'd say, obviously, the Nets are going to be more conservative. I'd say probably a couple weeks. I don't want him to be out for too long because I do want to see him on the court, and also I can barely watch the Nets team as is, so I'd like to see at least someone with a chance of going off every night running the ship. But I guess, what were your major takeaways from the injury?
Yeah, you mentioned it was a sprain, which, like you mentioned, also we are professionals, so I did do some Wikipedia research on the MCL.
Yes.
The use of sprain indicates that it's either grade 1 or grade 2, so not grade 3. That would be a tear. That's like worst case. That's like probably out for the season. This is probably in the like 2 to 4 week range, which is not the worst thing in the world, especially with the timing of where we are in the season, because the All-Star break is coming up soon, so if he sits out through the All-Star break, he'd only miss 5 games and he'd get 3 weeks off. So that could be like all it takes, and he could just miss these 5 games and be all set. He'll be reevaluated in a week, though, like you said. So he could miss even less. It's possible. Yeah, this was tough, though, because the Nets in that Wizards game seemed like they weren't like pulling away, but they were kind of like steadily in control for most of the game. And then things had started to fall apart a little bit before Kyrie went out. A 9-point lead had gone down to I think it was 3. And then Kyrie went out. Beal tied it with the and-one. And then after a couple baskets in the immediate aftermath of the injury, the Nets just completely fell apart. 13-2 Wizards run to end the game. So that was tough. And like you mentioned, the team had started to play terribly without Kyrie, pretty much dating back to like Christmas time. After a hot stretch without him at the beginning that had everyone kind of being like, oh, like, are they better off without Kyrie, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Clearly not the case with, I believe, 5 wins in the last month and a half, so not great. And we might have more of that going forward.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, listen, next couple games, Phoenix and Golden State, the Nets should be able to win those games without Kyrie. The key word in that is should, because they should have been able to beat Washington. They should have been able to beat the Knicks twice this season. And no win is guaranteed for this Nets team right now, because these other teams are coming in and saying, hey, we're playing the Nets right now. They're struggling. They're under 500. This is a team that we should be able to beat and have a chance against. So even though these look like good matchups on paper, especially the Golden State one, nothing is given right now. And then obviously after that, you have a really tough stretch with Toronto, Indiana, Toronto, and Philadelphia. And without Kyrie there for those four games, it's very conceivable that the Nets could go 0-4 and the Bulls could start gradually creeping their way closer and closer to potentially catching the Nets in Orlando right now, which is a scary thought.
Yeah, the biggest thing working in the Nets' favor is that like all of these teams are like pretty bad. Like the Nets, like we said, have been on a terrible stretch, and yet they're by a half game back in the seventh seed. The Magic have lost five straight. The Bulls have lost a couple in a row. The Pistons have been a train wreck also. So it's not like any team is like really threatening them. So like I still am like pretty confident that they'll make the playoffs. It's just like a matter of how badly they get decimated in the first round.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And I think if they were to get the seventh seed rather than the eighth seed, that's obviously going to be a huge boon. Mm-hmm. And I think they could make it fairly competitive against like a Miami or Boston if Kyrie gets hot one or two games. But I mean, we'll see. Right now, like last night was really bad. I think Kyrie definitely, it's not, he didn't have a good game last night. He really struggled with some turnovers and only 5 of 12 from the field, didn't get to the line at all, which is surprising. Obviously coming after a magnificent performance against the Bulls, which we'll get into, but I think it really showed down the stretch with the Nets being unable to score, and it was because, you know, obviously Prince had a horrible game, Karis wasn't able to get anything going where he wasn't even out there at the end, so Dinwiddie was having to do everything himself, and that's just been a tough situation. We've seen it be successful many times, we've also seen it struggle, and having a guy like Kyrie out there as someone who can be the main guy and Dinwiddie just being the safety valve down the stretch could have been enough to get the Nets the win. But that being said, Kyrie wasn't out there, obviously, with the injury. The Nets barely scored, and the Washington just did enough to get the win.
Yeah, definitely. And the point you made about having like another guy out there who could kind of take the reins is a good one, because, I mean, I was in my rewatch this morning, I was watching on the Wizards feed, and they were basically saying down the stretch, like, just don't let any of the three-point shooters get off looks, like guys like Joe Harris or Torian Prince, because other than Dinwiddie, like, no one's going to create anything, no one's going to attack or do anything, which is correct, and the Wizards were really effective down the stretch. They also were super aggressive rebounding. Like, Beal went up for a couple big rebounds. Ish Smith had, like, an offensive rebound on, it was, like, kind of a long one, and it went, like, over Jared Allen, but still, like, those are the type of plays that I'm used to seeing, like, Joe Harris make, and to see, like, I don't know, and Allen had a good game, but it was still, like, just the aggression from the Wizards down the stretch especially was, like, very evident.
Yeah, it was the aggression from everyone. I mean, no one on this Nets team is scrapping for loose balls, really. I think the main guy they have to do that is Kruse, who doesn't play at all.
Yeah.
And Claxton, someone that provides that energy as well. But it's just the little things. Guy like DeAndre Jordan in the first half got, like, an uncontested rebound, but he was out of bounds when he touched it, and it was easily avoidable. Temple stepping out of bounds on a play where he was kind of uncontested. Two offensive rebounds by the Wizards off of free throws. Like, these are the things when you add up, and especially with the Nets' poor free throw shooting again comes back to bite them, 13 of 21. Like, these are the problems. And, like, they were getting red hot from three in the first half, 12 of 18 at one point. They end the game 4 of 29. And if the Nets' threes aren't falling, they've shown that they just don't have anything else in the tank with the way they're shooting free throws. LeVert is just garbage right now. I'm kind of ready to cast him off as someone that's going to be a big-time impact player because he's 25. You know, you kind of are what you are, and I get it. His development's been stunted with injuries, but his touch is terrible shooting at all levels. It's not just his three-point shooting. He's shooting at under 50% at the rim this year because, one, his shot's getting blocked a lot, and two, he's missing a lot of easy layups. And that just can't happen when you're in your fourth season and you're coming out of college as a mature player even. So it's not like he's some 18-year-old guy who was in Europe for a year and had a cup of coffee there. Like, he should be someone that's established at this point, and it's just not consistent enough anywhere close to it. And he's only playing 20 minutes in a game against the Wizards, and it's not because he's in Kenny's doghouse. It's because he sucks right now.
Yeah, I think that's all super fair on Karis. The inconsistency is really frustrating because he does have games where he looks really good, where the outside shot, like, as ugly as it is, it goes in sometimes, and, like, those games, like, make you, like think about what he could be, especially because like with his frame and with his energy that he sometimes brings on that end, like defensively he can be really good, but the offense is just like so up and down. And when Kyrie goes out, like he's still like not doing anything, he's not really playing. Like to see it all put on Dinwiddie's shoulders still, even with Karis back. Like I remember when LeVert and Irving were both out at the same time, it was like, okay, Karis is coming back, maybe this can be like a little bit off of Dinwiddie's shoulders, kind of take some of the pressure off him. And that just like didn't really happen at all.
Yeah, I mean, and now with Kyrie out, Karis is going to have to be the one playing point guard and anchoring the second unit. And I just don't have any faith that the Nets are going to be able to score even close to efficiently in those minutes now. And I mean, between him and Torian Prince, who we'll get to, I think they combined for like 19 shooting possessions, basically. So field goal attempts, free throws, and they scored eight points out of those. 8 points. That can't happen.
Yeah. Combined 1 for 10 from 3 also.
Yeah. And Torian Prince was 0 of 8 from 3 on some of the most wide open looks I've ever seen. These weren't contested threes. They were wide open. And I get it's an off-shooting night from him. I think the one thing you can say about him is that he is a pretty good 3-point shooter. But for him to go 0 of 8, that's just going to be backbreaking for this type of team.
Yeah, and it's similar to the Karis thing, where it's the inconsistency more than anything else. Because Prince also has shown flashes of like hitting a bunch of shots, or like even like a couple times he'll like make plays off the bounce and get into the paint, but you just don't see it enough. And I thought he did look better with Kyrie there, and I still think that like in a supporting role he's probably gonna be better off. But now once again, like Kenny had a quote after the Bulls game where he was basically saying like, we haven't really been healthy the whole season, but like now everyone's here, like this is going to be really important in terms of like evaluation. And then for Kyrie to get hurt in the next game, so we can't really see how those guys play off him as much as we would have, is just, it's really frustrating.
Yeah, like Karis LeVert has negative win shares this season. that is mind-boggling, and it's because he's taking up a lot of possessions with a true shooting percentage of 46, which is like beyond comprehensible horrible. Right now he is an abomination on offense, and yes, he's shooting the three okay, but it's his 2-point percentage that has been terrible. He's shooting under 40% on twos alone. And also, for whatever reason, this is a more of a miscellaneous, but Kenny keeps picking him to be the guy taking the technical free throws.
I've noticed that, yeah.
What is that? He's a horrible free throw shooter. Like, not just this season, his career.
Yeah, that was... I actually... Yeah, I noticed that same thing. That was really strange. Because I think he did it in the Knicks game, I think. There were some technicals. Yeah, but...
And then the Bulls game also.
Yeah. I'm not really sure. Maybe he's just trying to get him into a rhythm. Trying to get him, like, some easy points and, like, see the ball go in. But
it's he's not
to
working. Make them.
Yeah.
Not working.
Yeah, definitely troubling times right now.
Yeah, and I think as you said before, like the Nets were up 9 or 10 for a lot of this. Like I think end of the first half was kind of a disaster. It went from 9 to I think 10-point lead to 2. Included that horrible Kyrie foul on Beal, basically at half court with 1 second left to give them 2 free throws because they were over the limit. And it's lucky it wasn't called for a 3-shot foul. Even like no one stopping ball at the end of the third quarter for Troy Brown getting that running 2-pointer. And I know these things balance out because Temple had an awesome buzzer beater in the first quarter, but overall it's those little things. Like the Nets are right now a team of vets and guys that think they're a lot better than they are, and no one's scrapping. And that's what happens when, like, right now no one in this team has any upside besides Kurth. I mean, they're surrounding their role players with the role players like Temple, like Wilson Chandler, guys that just aren't going to do those little things really. I mean, maybe they are, but I don't know. There's just not the fire there, and I'm really concerned because the Nets have committed a ton of money right now to extending Torian Prince and Karis LeVert, and it doesn't look like those guys are going to raise your floor or help you reach your ceiling whatsoever. And right now, like, you gave Torian Prince 2 years, $29 million. LeVert, you gave him 4 years, 54 or so, 52, like, or 3 years, 52. That's a lot, and that's going to really reduce your ability to make other moves if this thing doesn't work out.
Yeah, I think they, like, seriously need to consider, like, moving LeVert and Prince possibly as well. No, I'm saying in the offseason.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this is, like, a really weird time. There's There's been some like interesting quotes too, like Jared Allen after the game, talking about the Kyrie injury, said like, if you look at the Nets history, it always happens like this. Ever since I've been a Net, we've always seen people go down, which just seems like he's like kind of giving up. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And then there was the Dinwiddie quote about trying to avoid the Bucks in the first round, which like I get is like, that's like pretty honest. Like he doesn't want to face them. They're like the best team in the league by record. He doesn't think he can guard Giannis, which he said. But it's just kind of a weird thing to say. And
don't
so,
worry, Kyrie's going to guard Giannis like yeah. he did with the Celtics.
Yeah, he'll take that on. But just like seeing those quotes and like, I don't think either of those especially is like attributable to like the perception of Kyrie as a locker room cancer, but the just chemistry wise, not specific to Kyrie, but something just seems to be off with this team, especially compared to last year, which seemed like they had a real nice mix of like young guys, veterans, and just like a good camaraderie. It's weird to watch.
Yeah, for sure. It's frustrating, especially a game where like you're playing Washington and Joe Harris has an awesome game, 6 of 11 from three. Garrett Temple, I think his overall stat line didn't show as good as he was, especially in the first half, getting some easy layups, hitting threes. I thought he was really good. And like those role players do show out, but ultimately you just can't get a win because you just don't have the star power that you think you do. And a lot of it comes down to, yes, Kevin Durant's injured right now, but we don't know what he's going to be next year. We think he's going to be pretty close to what he has been in the past, which is a Hall of Fame, all-time great level player, but you can't bank on that, especially with the Nets luck.
Yeah, and also, yeah, the star power thing is a good point, because Beal was the best player on the court.
By far, by a mile.
Against the Suns
Isak
tomorrow.
Isak Bonga was second.
Yeah. Against the Suns tomorrow, Devin Booker is going to be the best player on the court. So, like, even against these bad teams, the Nets, especially with Kyrie out, just don't really have that kind of firepower, and they need to rely on, like, a whole is greater than the sum of his parts kind of thing, which just isn't really happening right now.
Yeah, for sure. There's nothing like that. I mean, I've been opining for it every game, but I definitely think Kurt should play over Wilson Chandler. I mean, I don't know. I just don't see, like, especially you want to see how this team grows, because this year is realistically a wash. Like, I just think Kurt does have a future on this team. Apparently Kenny disagrees with me, but I just don't see the point of really benching one of your players that has some upside to make an impact.
Yeah, and I feel the same way about Claxton. Like, DJ sometimes brings it, sometimes doesn't, but I think that just, like, the upside that Claxton can give you, like, why not play him and see what happens?
Yeah. Well, I think that's the tough part, because it's like you want to be able to manage the relationship with DeAndre. Yeah. Like, would you go about trying to play them? I mean, maybe there's more flexibility now that Kyrie's out. It's like, I guess, how do we see the rotation shaking up? I guess Dinwiddie obviously moves into his spot. Is this going to open up minutes for Kurucs, Claxton? I mean, what are you thinking there?
I mean, like, if they're just trying to keep the rotation the same, it would probably be TLC getting more minutes in the backcourt alongside, like, either LeVert or Temple acting as kind of the point guard for the second unit. But, yeah, there's definitely options. Like, they have a pretty flexible lineup. Like, Claxton has played the four some this season. Chandler could slide down to three. Prince could slide down to three. Harris could be a two. Like, they have a lot of guys who can play a lot of different positions. It's just a matter of how Kenny wants to do that and who he wants to give those minutes to. I think TLC has been, like, solid when he's played also. I think Claxton...
He's okay.
Yeah, I think Claxton and Kurucs are the guys who I would want to see get more minutes, but it depends what combinations he wants to go with. He has, like, a ton of options just in terms of the versatility positionally of the guys on the Nets right now.
Yeah, and maybe it would be a good thing to play like a Claxton or Kurucs, and then maybe you can move Prince down to the three and make him a bit more comfortable there, because I'm sure the wear and tear of playing the four every night hasn't helped for sure.
Yeah, definitely. But then, like, at the same time, like, he should be able to blow by guys. And I know that there's not, like,
well,
a lot of big
anyway
fours that he's... Yeah, there's not a lot of big fours out there, but he's... Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm interested. Like, I'm just trying to get a sense of... I actually really like Claxton's upside, but I'm trying to think if he would... Like, he's definitely more exciting, but overall, would he actually be more helpful than DeAndre playing the backup five?
I think so. I think he's better... effort-wise, and then, like, defensively, I think he's much more willing and able to defend on the perimeter. I think part of it is schematic, where DJ, like, hangs back on screens, and that kind of leaves a lot of like floaters and like open jump shots. But I think Claxton, maybe just because he's young, but I think also he's like, he's good moving laterally, and I think he can kind of stick with smaller guys when he gets switched onto them better, that kind of thing. And then on the offensive end, like, DeAndre's a great finisher and a great catch guy, like on lob passes, but I think that Claxton can do a lot of the same things he can. I don't think it's a big drop off at all offensively, and I think that the potential upside defensively is worth giving him a chance.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think also, like, DeAndre is, as you said, he's hanging back in the paint. He's not closing out on any shooters. Claxton does have the mobility and the effort to, like, get out on them and hang with them if they drive to the basket, which actually could be something. I mean, I don't know. This Nets team right now, like, defensively, it's not great, but it's also not the biggest problem. I mean, they're 23rd in offensive rating right now, which, given some of the guys they have and this theoretical spacing, should not happen. Like, they have a dive guy on both the starting lineup and second unit, have guys that can space the floor, like Joe Harris, Torian Prince, and then have two really dynamic creators in Kyrie and Dinwiddie. And obviously, a lot of these numbers are happening because Kyrie's been out for so much. But, I don't know, it's just been tough to watch.
Yeah, I feel like the team isn't, like, terrible at any one specific thing. They're just kind of, like, pretty mediocre at everything, which doesn't lead to a lot of wins. And then there's nights where they have, like, a poor shooting night, or they have a ton of turnovers, or they miss free throws. Like, and then if like one, like, I don't know what the word would be, one domino comes out of the chain, the whole thing doesn't fall. That analogy makes no sense. But like, if one thing is out of place, they're not going to win, basically.
Right. Yeah. Well, on a brighter note, should we talk about Kyrie's 54-point game?
Yes. Yeah. That was great.
That was fun. That was fun. I like that.
He was incredible. And like, a lot of and ones, a lot of pull up threes, like, and just seeing the camaraderie, like, this looked like the fun Nets team that we wanted to see and that we thought we could see at the start of the year. Like, there was one play specifically, a friend of mine tweeted it out, where Jared Allen had like a big block on one end, and then that led to Kyrie getting an and one on the other end in transition. And Kyrie immediately went and found Jared Allen and was like hyping him up for the block and was not really like celebrating his nice finish on the other end at all. It was like all about the team and like great defensive play, JA kind of thing. And that's like, that was like exactly what I want to see from this Nets team. And it's a shame that Kyrie got hurt in the literal next game. That was just terrible.
Yeah, he was awesome. I think my biggest thing was that it wasn't like he was chucking. I mean, he was so efficient. And at the start of the game, he was really looking to get guys involved. And it's all of a sudden he's 3-3 from the field, 4-4, 5-5. He's like, oh shit, I'm just cooking. And then he just kind of went off from there. But even at the end, he was still looking to pass and distribute. Only had 5 assists and 4 turnovers, but I think that undermines how actually concise and good of a game that he played. And I think my favorite sequence was the last 10 seconds of the second quarter. Dinwiddie had a really nice fast break block, which he can do with his athleticism and length. Torian Prince throws a nice baseball pass to Kyrie, who was cherry picking and got the layup. Then Kyrie steals it from Satoransky, pulls up from 3 from 30 feet and hits the buzzer beater. Like, that was awesome. God.
Yeah,
that was so nice.
Yeah, that was like a Steph Curry, Dame Lillard shot at the end there.
Mm-hmm. And also, how about Garrett Temple's big dunk? He did like a Statue of Liberty dunk.
I didn't think I was going to like him, but I've kind of liked watching Garrett Temple play. He's like been one of the guys who I've enjoyed. He had a cold stretch earlier in the season, but I think he's been pretty stable for the most part.
Yeah, I think he's interesting. I think he bricks a little too many threes for my liking, but he is very fluid, which I do enjoy watching. And also, I love that he got engaged to his now fiance, Kara McCullough. Congrats to them. And then they went to Benihana after, the one on Midtown West.
Oh, wow. We've been to that Benihana.
Yeah, I know. I was there like 2 weeks ago also.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so that was great.
That's fantastic. I wonder what he ordered.
I don't know. I feel like he's a Landon Meadow guy.
Yeah, I could see it. I wonder if he's like, if he goes for the food or for like the whole, like the tricks and
experience,
the vibe of it all.
Yeah. He's like, Kara, will you marry me? Now let's go get this onion volcano.
I hope he had the guy like spell it out in the rice. You know, they do the I heart you. Maybe he
The
did,
I
like,
heart
will you.
Will you
marry me? Yeah.
But it's like the ring is in the shrimp, like shrimp fried rice when he's doing the I heart you.
The chef like tosses him the ring off the spatula.
Oh my God. I love that. Wow, we are getting off the rails. Also, wait, is there any credence to my Dame Lillard for MVP take, given the way he's playing?
I was just thinking about that this morning. Well, the Blazers are like not in the playoffs if the season ended today.
They're 4-0. So
I know that seems like it could change. That would have to change. And then I don't know. It's tough to make a case against Giannis. If he were to like roll an ankle or something and miss like a handful of games, I think that does open the door for Lillard, for LeBron, for Luka to a lesser extent, and Harden if he can ever make a shot again. Lillard has been out of his mind the last two or 3 weeks, and
49 points per game over his last six.
Yeah, and he's like playing efficiently too. Like I think he's shooting around like 50%+ from the field. He's been unbelievable, and like with Steph Curry out, he's basically become that guy. It's just that the Blazers have had a ton of injuries, especially at center, and they're relying on guys like Whiteside to fill that void. They like had to sign Carmelo off the scrap heap. They started a guy who I had literally never heard of at the four the other day because Melo was out grieving the loss of Kobe Bryant in that Laker game. I had literally never seen that guy before. It was
Wayne Gabriel.
Yeah.
He played for Kentucky.
I'm not a big college guy.
I didn't realize they had Jalen Horde also, the Wake Forest guy.
Yeah, but like the fact that this team that is literally just him and McCollum is 1-4 in a row, 7 of 10, and they're like closing in on Memphis for the 8th spot. I would love to see them in the playoffs.
Yeah, they need to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be cool. Also, Dumbuya alert. After you rudely told me that they were talking about him getting sent to the G League, has 17 at halftime against the Nuggets.
Was it rude? I was just telling you what I saw on Twitter.
It was a lie. It wasn't true. Do you want to break down Jeremiah Martin's first minutes with the Nets?
Up to you. I don't know.
I like him. He's gritty. He's gritty. He's getting in his jersey of guys.
Yeah. 2 minutes in these two games.
Yep. Love it. Well, we're getting off the rails here. We are going to the game on Monday. We'll be potting, I guess, around that, and then talking to you about our experience. Hopefully, we'll be able to see a Nets win. The last time they played the Suns earlier this year, it was an embarrassment, and they lost by 26 points as Rubio absolutely demolished them. Hopefully, they can make it competitive at least. I feel like the Nets and Suns always have fun games. But follow us on Twitter in the meantime. I am at JMBass_. Marcus is at Marcus Barrahall. The podcast is at Locked On Nets. Subscribe to us, rate us, review us. We want to hear your feedback. And until next time, be well.
Bye.